Amen. Good morning, church. It is good to see you all after the rain. It has been a long and wet week with not a lot of sunshine. I don't remember the last time we had sunshine. I think it was October of 04, somewhere in there. That's what it feels like anyway. Wow. It has been a while, but so much more. I mean, I appreciated it so much more this morning when I got up and I did see the sun. And I kind of looked out the window and I thought, oh, wow, I've forgotten how great that looked. You know, you just kind of get used to it being bad for a while. And so when it does come, when relief does come in the form of sunshine, man, it's such a welcome reprieve. Had a great conclusion to Upward yesterday. That has been just a great ministry. So much thanks is due to those people who put in so much time organizing and running that. And really thankful for the impact that makes, not only on our congregation, but on our community. And today we get to wrap that up with the celebration this afternoon. Really looking forward to seeing that and watching those kids celebrate the end of a successful Upward season. And whether your team won every game or did not win a game, it's a successful end to the Upward season because of the teaching that goes on during that. So it's been a great, great year. Now, the great Alfred Hitchcock, he was known as a master of really no connection at all to what I was just talking about. It was kind of a rough transition. Some of you are like, wait a minute, what does Alfred Hitchcock have to do with Upward? Nothing. But he was a master of suspense. He was not just a... There we go. Just like your preacher, a master of suspense. You never know. But Alfred Hitchcock points out that suspense is a very different thing than surprise. He was kind of bemoaning the fact that a lot of the scarier movies had just resorted to surprise. And he said surprise would be, you know, something like if this morning, somewhere in the auditorium at some point during the sermon, there was a kid with a big balloon and it popped. I mean, we'd all be shocked, right? I mean, it would probably startle us and it would take us a few moments to gather our thoughts and kind of pull it back together. And we'd be like, oh, and then we kind of chuckle to ourselves and then we'd finally move on. That's surprise. Suspense is sitting behind that kid and watching him torture that balloon for 30 minutes. I mean, the whole time you're watching this kid with this balloon, you're hearing the sound of their hands rubbing roughly over the vinyl or the rubber of the balloon. You're watching as this balloon is twisted and pressed into submission. And you know at any moment it could go, right? Knowing that it could pop it at any time. That is suspense. And this morning, in the Gospel of Mark, we get some suspense. It's like watching, and imagine two men are sitting at a table. And they're having a normal conversation, and then they begin arguing about football, about which team is better, or which quarterback's the greatest, or whatever it might be. Just this sort of inane kind of guy argument. And then while this argument's going on, you and I know that there's a bomb beneath the table because we watched it be planted. And so the whole time this argument's going on, we're like, no, you got to go. You got to finish that coffee and get away from the table, right? You mean... We're kind of urging them on. Well, that's the sort of suspense we get this morning in the Gospel of Mark. Now, remember, Jesus has just been on the western bank of, or on the eastern bank of the Sea of Galilee, a predominantly Gentile area. But now we read that he's gotten into the boat per the request of the people who didn't like the fact that their pigs had run into the sea. Jesus complies. He gets back in the boat. And it said, when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, now he's back on the eastern side, the predominantly Jewish side, near Bethsaida, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders, named Jairus, came. And when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him. My little girl's dying. Please, come put your hands on her so that she'll be healed and live. So Jesus went with him. And now we're on the clock. Time is ticking. Jairus is an important man. He's a leader, or possibly one of the elders of a synagogue. He would have been a prominent man in his community, well known as a religious leader. And as we've already seen in the Gospel of Mark, leaders like Jairus are not particularly receptive to Jesus. Who Jesus is, what he does, what he says, the authority he claims to have, all of that rubs these leaders who base all of their authority in the Torah, all of that rubs them the wrong way. Something is so different about Jesus that they just cannot stand him. But not Jairus, at least not now. Because Jairus is desperate. His little girl is dying. The word there is thugatrion. It's the Greek word, thugatrion. Literally, little daughter. And it was a little pet name that you would use for your girl. Didn't, if she was young or even of marriageable age, you might call her thugatrion. She might be a grown woman and have children, but if she's in a desperate situation, she's still your baby. Ladies, you know what I'm talking about. Guys, you probably do too. She'll always be my little girl. She'll always be my baby, right? So Jairus does something that's unthinkable for a man in his position. He throws himself at Jesus' feet and pleads. He begs for help. He believes, he has faith that Jesus can do what no one else can do, that he can save his little girl. And Jesus responds to this desperation and faith by going with him. Now, unfortunately, as the story tells us, so does the whole rest of this large crowd, right? And they're pressing in on Jesus and his entourages. They're trying to make headway towards Jairus' house and get to the daughter who is dying. I mean, the clock is ticking. You could almost hear it. And you know at any moment the bomb could go off, and the crowd is still pressing, and they're calling for him, and they're asking for him to say something. They want him to heal them, and they're impeding Jesus' progress. Even as you and I and Jairus' father, that we all hear the ticking in his little girl, his daughter's life. And with time and people pressing in on Jesus on all sides, Mark inserts this desperate, frantic, long run-on sentence. And this is what it says. This is literally one sentence in Greek. It says this: "And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years and who had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors, who had spent all that she had, who grew worse instead of better, and who, when she heard about Jesus, came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak." Because she thought, if I even touch his clothes, I'll be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped. And she knew in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized the power had gone out from him, and he turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the crowd, people crowding around you," his disciples answered. "And yet you ask, who touched me?" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, trembling with fear, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." 12 years. 12 years of physical pain. 12 years of being unclean.
12 years of being unable to bear children. 12 years of being unable to enter the assembly of God's people. 12 years of being unable to touch anyone without making them unclean. 12 painful years of bad medicine that offered hope but left her penniless. 12 years an outcast, a nothing, a no one. Like Jairus, she's desperate. But unlike Jairus, she knew in her heart that she was unworthy to even fall at Jesus' feet. Knew in her heart that there was no way Jesus would bother with her. Knew in her heart that her pleas would go unanswered. Sneaking up in the press of the crowd seemed like her only option. And even that was pretty audacious, because Jewish law prohibited her from touching anyone without their permission, right? But desperation of her situation, that had pressed her like it pressed Jairus. She had to do something. No one else could help. There were no other remedies, no other doctors, no other options. But she believed. She believed Jesus could make a difference. That he would make a difference. Believed that he could save her from her physical suffering and end her 12 years as a social pariah, a castaway. End her isolation and rejection and repugnance. All of this and more Jesus knows. He knows it. So when she touches him, there is a transaction that takes place at a much deeper level, far beyond the mere brush of a dirty hem against fingers. What she had planned as a secret one-way contact proves to be a two-way and is brought out into the open. And with the clock still ticking on Jairus' daughter, and the crowd pressing in on him urgently, and his disciples saying, "What do you want us to do? We don't know who touched you," Jesus stops. Why is he wasting precious time? Why is he asking who touched him when everybody's been touching him? Why not just let this woman be healed and moved on? I mean, the good has been done here. Let's just keep going. But Jesus here isn't looking to identify the woman. He already knows who it is. He wants to recognize her. He wants to call attention to a woman whom everyone else carefully avoids calling attention to. Whom everyone else, on purpose, slide their eyes past because it's just too uncomfortable. Jesus calls attention to her. He wants her to tell her story because she needs to tell it and because everyone else needs to hear it. He wants her to know and for everyone else to know that she is important too. Just like Jairus, she deserves my time and my attention. So she tells her story. And when she finishes her story, Jesus does two things. One, he lets her know that her healing was not because of his magical robe. No, it was because of her faith. And two, he calls her daughter, Thugatar. Like Jairus' little daughter, only this is a big daughter. Interestingly, nowhere else in any of the Gospels does Jesus ever call anyone daughter. Even as everyone else is pressing urgently towards recognizing and fixing the Jairus daughter situation, Jesus stops to recognize his daughter by faith. And while Jesus was still speaking, some people from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader, said, "Your daughter is dead. Why bother the teacher anymore?" And just like that, boom. Boom, the balloon has popped. The bomb has gone off. Jairus' daughter didn't make it out of the room alive. The situation has gone from desperate and urgent to hopeless. So why bother the teacher anymore? It's gone from almost unfixable to unfixable because Jesus was wasting time, ignoring what they said. Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." It's true. Situation may be hopeless, but Jesus is no stranger to hopeless situations. The demon-possessed man in living among the tombs in the Gerasenes, that was a hopeless case too. So was this woman who was most recently healed. Her case was hopeless as well. So Jesus ignores the dismissal of these messengers, and he urges this synagogue leader, this prominent man of faith, this synagogue leader, to have the same sort of faith as a woman who hadn't been able to go to church in 12 years. He tells this guy to have her sort of faith. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? Child's not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother, and the disciples who were with him. Peter, James, and John were the three he brought with him. He took them and went in where the child was, and he took her by the hand and said, this is Aramaic, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old, we find out. And at this, they were completely astonished. And he gave strict orders to not let anyone know about this. Like, that's going to hold up when the dead girl walks out of the room. And told them to give her something to eat. Talitha kum. Literally, little lamb, arise. Some people wonder why Mark recorded the Aramaic words here, because clearly Mark does not speak Aramaic, nor do most of his readers. Some people thought, well, maybe like, you know, magical words like abracadabra or hocus pocus, kind of words that would seem like a magical incantation to Mark's readers. But that doesn't appear to be the case, especially when Jesus' words on the cross and other places are recorded in Aramaic as well. It's more like that's the words that were carried with the story when Mark wrote it down, and it's just like, it's just the little simple word. Jeez, anybody who spoke any Aramaic at all would know, no, this is not a magical word. This is like, hey, kid. Just simple little words. And with two simple words and the touch of his hand, this daughter lives. Just as the woman with the issue of blood was restored to life with the simple touch of Jesus' robe. All the commotion with the mourners and likely flute players, these were going to be professional mourners. Any Jewish household that was decent at all, I mean, the bare minimum you could do was to hire two mourners and a flute player. If you had two pennies to rub together, you hired two mourners and a flute player. This is a synagogue leader, likely much more, and kind of showing what kind of mourning they were doing when they stopped to laugh at Jesus, more like professional mourners. But all the commotion with the mourners and the flute players that any respectable house would have hired for the occasion, that was all wasted effort. All the years that the woman spent on cures that never worked from doctors without power, wasted effort. It may have looked like Jesus was wasting time, but Jesus never wastes anything. Not time, not opportunity, and certainly not people. No, they were the ones wasting time by searching for solutions from anywhere other than Jesus. Clearly seen in this story, there's no solution apart from Jesus. but awfully difficult for us to see in our stories. Two daughters, one 12 years old, one suffering for 12 years. Two social circles, one prominent, one a castaway. Two approaches, one openly, one secretly. But one faith in one Lord with one repeated result. Restoration to life. Your situation is unique. This morning, it is. Your problems are all your own. It's not the exact same as your spouse's or your kids or your parents. You have your own problems. You're separated by time and circumstances from the miracles of this particular story. But I'm here to tell you this morning that your need is exactly the same. Faith and healing. Faith and healing. You need faith in Jesus. You need healing from Jesus. And it could be that your wounds are emotional. It could be that they're spiritual. It could be that they're physical. It could be that they're financial. It could be that they're relational. But you've got wounds that need healing. You need faith in Jesus. You need hope in Jesus. You need healing from Jesus. Just like the woman with the issue of blood, just like Jairus' daughter. Stop looking for peace and completion in distraction. Stop seeking fixing in other people who are just as broken as you are. Stop searching for life and happiness and fulfillment. Stop looking for that real life from anywhere else, from anyone else. There's only one source of life. That's it. Everything you are looking for, everything you know that you need deep down inside, it's not found anywhere else. It's not found on the TV or on the movie screen. It's not found in the things that you own. It's not found in who you marry or who you date. It's not found in your parents. It's not found in your kids. It's not found in your work, no matter how great you are at it. It is not found anywhere else from anywhere else. There is only one Lord and Master of life, and He thinks that you are worth saving, that you are not hopeless, that you are His daughter or His son too. That's the Jesus of Mark. And that's the Jesus who waits for you this morning. And if you'd like to meet Him, if you need forgiveness, hope, help, and healing, and if we can help you with that in any way, come now as we stand and as we sing.